The lines are open. 1-300-872-911. John McKenzie. Real music, real opinions. 4CA.
Well, now Christmas, New Year behind us, of course, so we've got a federal election fast approaching, and of course there's going to be a lot more coverage, whether you like it or not, in the media. It's interesting watching the figures. Just since Christmas, there's been a significant change. It says here in this, and it's just been put in front of me, actually, if a federal election were held today, the LNP would win with a two-party preferred vote of 53%. Which is already up 1% since Christmas compared to the ALP, which is on 47%, already down 1% since Christmas. So interesting, too, they've done some qualitative studies, which surprised me a little bit, as in male versus female or men versus women. For example, gender divides, when you look at these figures, men are more supportive of nuclear energy and more worried about extreme left-wing views than women. Women are more aggrieved by soaring living costs and have lower trust in government. So, very interesting, the nuclear energy one. Here it is. Support from women for nuclear energy, 23 points lower than men. Also, when it comes to trusting trusting the juvenile courts or the courts and the justice system, it says research showed women are more pessimistic on many matters there. They 6 points higher in the view that living standards have got worse in the past 2 years, 8 points lower than men in trusting the federal government, and 10 points lower than men in trusting the justice system. So interesting figures. Oh, higher support among women for rent freeze and rent cap. And this isn't surprising either. Women are more concerned about the state of our hospitals and health care. But when it comes to extreme left-wing views, men are 13 points more likely than women to believe that left-wing views are a very serious threat to our country. On matters like this, I turn to a gentleman who lives and breathes figures like this. He's the Associate Professor of Politics and Journalism at Griffith University. Dr. Paul Williams, good morning.
Good morning, John.
How about this nuclear energy feedback? It's an interesting one, Paul.
Yeah, it's we knew that there was a gender gap in politics or electoral politics. And, you know, going back years ago, women supported the Conservative parties. You know, in the late 1940s, 50s and 60s, women were supporting the Conservative parties, even into the 70s, more than men, and men were more supportive of Labor. But since really the Keating days, since, you know, we saw the big shift, the working class move away from the Keating Labor government towards the coalition. Since those days, women since the 90s have been gravitating towards the centre-left and men have been gravitating to the centre-right. So there's been a complete reversal. And we'd think that the gender gap, you know, there were signs that the gender gap was actually narrowing, but it's on these sorts of figures, you'd say that the gender gap seems to be as high as ever, maybe even expanding. But no surprise there. We've long known that men are, you know, for want of a better word, anti-woke more than women. That they support, men are more interested in those, you know, technological things like, you know, IT, nuclear power, whatever. Women are more interested in, you know, what we call the softer portfolios of healthcare, childcare, etc. And interestingly, I don't know the statistics on this, but some might argue that women are more responsible for the grocery shop than men, and therefore they're exposed to increased grocery prices more than men, and therefore have a more pessimistic view on where the economy is going. Because let's face it, that's where the rubber hits the road, isn't it? We can all read all the inflation figures we like in the newspaper, but it's when we hand over our wallet or hand over our cash or card at the checkout, that's when we know inflation's a problem. So no surprises there, really. It sort of confirms what we know, but quite rightly, it seems that the gender gap is bigger than a lot of people suspected.
This nuclear energy figure, support from women, 23 points lower than men. Now, this you would think would be a significant problem or challenge for Peter Dutton. But I look at these figures that have just come through this morning. If a federal election was held today, the LNP would win with a two-party preferred vote of 53%, which is already up 1% since last week, compared to the ALP, 47%, down 1%. So despite this opposition on this nuclear question from the female vote, Peter Dutton is still looking strong.
Peter Dutton's still looking strong, but he still does have a woman problem. But in the same way, Labor has a man problem. So again, they might cancel out. Let's go back to this Morgan poll. I'm in two minds about this, and it depends on how you define the term win. That 53% is the highest two-party preferred vote that the opposition's had since the 2022 election. No doubt about that. That's a six-point gap between them and Labor. But that's a swing of 5 percentage points, which is a good, hefty swing, bigger than usual. But that only yields the government, the opposition, 15 seats. They're on 55. They need 21. They're still six short. And if they win 15 seats, there's really no crossbenches left in the parliament for them to cobble together a coalition. You've got probably someone like Bob Catter from Kennedy would be the only one who'd support an Abbott-led minority government. But there'll be still, I suspect, there'll still be lots of greens and teals left in the parliament. So the Labor Party will lose at least 10 seats, possibly up to 15. And so the only thing we know for certain is that there will be a hung parliament. Neither Albanese nor Dutton will be able to form majority government. So it depends on how you say win. So it may well be that Peter Dutton's coalition does actually secure more seats in the lower house than Labor.
Yes.
But Labor, I'm pretty certain, 90% certain, that they will cobble together a coalition, or not coalition, but a support through confidence and supply from Greens and Teals and get to the 76. Wow. So, but nonetheless, it's still a bad figure for Labor that they're 6 points behind. The good news for Labor is that their primary vote is on the way up. They're on 31 points, and the last Roe Morgan poll had them at 28. So they've grown 3 points in a month. So Labor's vote's up 3 points in a month, and the LNP vote is also up 2.5 points in a month. So it's the minor parties that are taking a hit. Like One Nation vote, for example, 3.5%. That's really low. I mean, going back to early December, Roy Morgan measured it at 6.5%. So it's dropped 3 points. So there's no doubt One Nation's in serious trouble.
Yeah.
And so it looks like Malcolm Roberts won't win his... You know, I'd be very surprised if Malcolm Roberts wins his seat back. He's the top Senate candidate in Queensland. So that One Nation could be reduced just to one, which is Pauline Hanson herself. And the Greens as well. The Greens vote is... the Greens vote is up according to Freshwater. They were 14%. The Greens vote is down 1 point from the last Roy Morgan poll. And as I've said before, that before the state election, I thought the three Brisbane Green seats, Ryan, Brisbane and Griffith, were rock solid for the Greens. Can't be lost. But after the Greens' quite disappointing result, it wasn't disastrous, but they lost a seat and their vote only climbed by a smidge. That means those three seats are back in play.
Mm.
So the LNP may actually pick up Ryan and Brisbane, and Labor might pick up Max's seat of Griffith, also in Brisbane. So watch out for movement in those Green seats as well. Mm-hmm. So One Nation in the Senate and the Greens in Brisbane, that's probably the only thing we're going to see changes in. I don't think the LNP is going to win any seats off Labor in Queensland, and I don't think Labor's going to win any seats off the LNP in Queensland. The movement will be in Western Sydney,
yes,
Perth and outer Melbourne.
Yes. Let's talk about outer Melbourne. I'm fascinated by this. The two-party preferred vote for the coalition, it's risen to a higher level since the last federal election. It mentions here a dramatic swing to the coalition in Victoria after the leadership spill. What's this about?
Yes, there was no doubt that the Victorian opposition leader was unpopular. And the Victorian Liberal Party was always, left-leaning, but it was always the most progressive branch. You know, it was always a very progressive branch. Even going back to pre-1901 days, pre-Federation times, it was always a progressive branch. You know, they were, protectionists, and they loved the arts, and they always looked down their nose a bit like the brash New South Wales Liberals, who were very right-wing. You know, there's all that interstate rivalry. And, you know, the Victorian Liberals were always much more, much rarefied and dignified and moderate and progressive. But this seems to have taken a turn to the right. There's no doubt that the Victorian Liberals have taken a turn to the hard right with the election of the new leader. And also with the collapse in support for Labor's Dan Andrews, and then Jacinta Collins' premiership is also fairly unpopular. So I think the LNP the coalition would win a state election easily in Victoria today. You put all those things together, and all of a sudden, the unelectable Victorian Liberals are looking pretty good. So yes, Albanese is going to cop a hiding in outer Melbourne.
Wow.
There's no doubt about it.
When's the election going to be called, do you think?
Well, I've been saying that Albo will go as long as he can because he needs every minute to make up the ground.
Mm.
And look how he's come out swinging. The year wasn't even a week old and he was up in Queensland selling a new road.
Yes.
So, I'm sure a lot of the LNP front bench were on the beach having a nap, and he was out campaigning for votes. So he's, you know, he's in it to win it. And he's taking a leaf out of Stephen Miles' book, I think, that if when you're staring down a barrel of disaster, come out swinging harder, which is good. That will help Labor. There's no doubt that an early start will help Labor. But having said that, there's not many votes. As I said, there's no real votes for Labor in Queensland. All he's trying to do is stem the hemorrhage and keep the Senate vote up.
Exactly.
So, you know, Labor's still very much on the nose in Queensland, particularly regional Queensland. So my argument has been that it'll be 17th of May, which is the last possible date for a half Senate and full House election. But the word I'm hearing now is that a lot of Labor folk are pushing for an April election, maybe April 12th, which means they don't have to deliver another budget.
Oh, okay.
Because last year's budget was very, very sweet. We all remember that was a very sweet budget. Mm. And even then, I thought at the time that that generous budget last year meant we were meant to have an election in November or December.
Yes.
But guess what didn't happen? We didn't get interest rate cuts.
Exactly.
And if we had interest rate cuts in the second half of last year, we would have already had our election.
Wow.
But we didn't get interest rate cuts, so the election has been deferred. So it's odds on that we will get an interest rate cut from the RBA in February. And it's now eminently possible that Albanese will dissolve the parliament in March and have for an election in April. So I'm revisiting my 17th of May
okay.
proposal.
Yes.
And so I'm saying now, anytime between April 12 and 17 May.
April 12, I've got to write this down. I think other people will be writing it down too. Paul, it's wonderful to get this background information from you. Thank you.
My pleasure.
And wonderful to have you back. That's Dr. Paul Williams, Associate Professor in Politics and Journalism at Griffith University. I love that term. Albo, yes, he's in Queensland, selling a new road. That's our Bruce Highway.